in my experience, I think I can put my hand on my heart and say that I would trust my guide dog before I would trust a person. Now, that might sound a bit tough to hear, but my dog is my eyes, and the relationship develops to a point where the person and the dog become symbiotic. And it's at that point, it's that symbiosis that we all strive for. So it becomes second nature. So you and the dog are in tune. You're in tune when the dog is out of harness, and when the dog is free to socialise and to be a dog. But then to put that harness on and then to work with the dog like that is quite profound.
I love my dog as much as I love for you. For you.
My name is Dave Kent. I'm a totally blind person and a guide dog owner of 36 years standing now. So I just about know how many legs they've got. I was matched with my first guide dog in 1979. And this was following some surgery that I had to hopefully afford me some more vision. Unfortunately, I had some surgery that didn't go the way we hoped it would. So those first tentative steps with my dog were taken with a chocolate Labrador called Elma. And my relationship with guide dogs has progressed and flourished ever since then. I'm presently between dogs, and I'm waiting to be matched with a new dog now. My last dog, Quince, being retired back in January of last year.
My name is Nicola Muckle and I'm a guide dog mobility instructor. And my job is to train a guide dog for its last 3 months of training, then to match and train them with a blind or visually impaired person. They make great companions, and people seem to be able to really relate to them. You know, dogs seek a lot of eye contact, and they can read postures, body language. So we feel like that sometimes that they can reflect what we're thinking, or they can understand our moods. And I think people relate really well to dogs because of that.
Thank you. That's that dog, mate. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. I'm going to get all that coming past. My name is Sharky. I'm a homeless person and I'm from Watford. I got she's three on Christmas Day, this Christmas, so three years ago. My dad was working in South Africa, helping people out there, like children and everything else, being a driver out there. And she was in a little bag, stuck up a telegraph pole, wrapped in barbed wire. So my dad cut her down, put her in his lorry, went to the government, paid like so much money, and brought her back home to England. She's been with the family ever since. So, she weighs a ton, I tell her. Me and her go through everything together. I mean, everything together. We sleep together. We go swimming together. You name it, we do everything together. Me and this dog. It's like Turner and Hooch. Literally, we do everything together. I mean, she's out of this world. I couldn't ask for a better dog. I really couldn't ask for a better dog. Literally. She does as I'm told and everything. She loves me to pieces. I think what it is, where she got saved with my dad and everything else over there, she come over to this country, met me. Me and her sparked straight away because I had her in my hands like a little ball of fluff, and we just took from there. And ever since then, it's just been a tight bond.
Hi, So my name's Vicky Ratcliffe and I'm a PhD student at the University of Sussex. So human speech is a really complex signal, and it doesn't just have information about what the person's saying, but also about the way they say things, who the person is. There's a lot of information that's being transmitted at the same time, and what humans can do is take parts of that signal out and they process it in different ways. So we were interested to see if dogs do this as well. The way that we designed the study was a simple behavioural design. So basically, we play a sound to the dog and it is from both sides of them at the same time. So the sound goes into both of their ears equally. And when that happens, the majority of the input from each ear crosses over to the opposite hemisphere of the brain, so it goes across to the opposite side. And if one hemisphere is more specialised in processing the information in the sound, then it'll lead them to hear the sound more clearly from the opposite ear. So if they turn towards the sound in one direction, then that indicates that the information that they're listening to in the sound is being processed more strongly in the opposite side of the brain. We use this to test different information in the speech signal. So obviously we can't ask dogs to pay attention to certain aspects of speech. So we had things like a phrase that they had learned to respond to, a command that they knew, versus speech that they'd never heard before. So either foreign language, or we changed the phonemes round in the command so that it sounded familiar, but it was meaningless to them. And they actually responded in opposite ways to those signals. So it suggests that the verbal information has to be meaningful to them to be processed in a certain way. We also looked at how they responded to the other information in the voice. So what we did then was we took out the verbal information, but we left everything else in there. So things like the speaker's tone of voice, their gender, all of that information we left in. And again, they showed an opposite bias to when they had meaningful verbal information. So it suggests that the speaker-related information in the voice, so everything except for the verbal information, is processed more in one side of the brain, which turned out to be the right side, whereas the verbal information, if it was meaningful, was more processed in the left side, which is actually parallel to what we do as humans.
Hello, I'm Susie, and my dog's name is Ruby.
So Ruby,
Ilos. That was good. What she's done is she's watched me and she responded to my command that I wanted her to stop. The type of dogs are English Springer Spaniels and they're liver and white. And Ruby is used for shooting. My dogs have changed my life completely. They've kind of almost fulfilled myself, Ruby, with them, because I haven't got children of my own, but I do love my dogs and I class them as my children. And they get me out. They get me out into the countryside, which I love, and I love to see the birds and the feeling of just being out with them and walking with them along the fields and everything. It's lovely and it's really good exercise as well.
Stay.
My name is Ross McCarthy and I work as a canine behaviour consultant. So that pretty much involves going into the homes of private clients who are experiencing behavioural issues with their dogs.
Rightwards, close. Good boy, sit down. Good boy. Ready, sit. Stand. Stay. Yes, good boy, very clever.
So some dogs have behavioural issues because people fail to perhaps understand the dog and the breed that they've chosen. So for example, all dogs have, or all breeds of dog have, predisposed behaviours. If you understand that when you choose a dog and you work with that, then you can end up with a nice companion. But people often choose dogs based on aesthetics. So they see a dog down the road, they think, well, that looks nice, I'll have that, that'll do great. Don't know anything about the dog at all, don't understand how much exercise they require, or how difficult the breed may be to rear. Most behavioural issues really are caused by a lack of understanding from the human aspect, and also not putting in the groundwork that they need to put in at the time they need to put it in. So not socialising the dog correctly. You have a very finite window to induce the dog to all aspects of society, really, which is about 5 to 12 weeks of age. And if you fail to do that, dogs then can become fearful or aggressive in different situations simply because they're not able to cope with it, because they haven't learnt that in the period that they were able to. People do tend to have very strong connections with dogs, and I think a part of that is because as a species they're fairly similar in the fact that they live in family groups as we do, and therefore we can see in them something that we're familiar with, so we can give them, you know, a role in our family, if you like. And I think they also give us lots that perhaps we don't get from other people. So as an example of that, when you come home from work, maybe your partner will grunt at you and the kids will be upstairs and they might wave at you or something like that, whereas the dog's always pleased to see you. So you kind of think, oh, actually, there is some kind of point to being, actually, rather than just being grunted at. So dogs are just, they give you kind of this unconditional love, really, and then they have lots. They don't have those horrible attributes that some people have. So they don't tell lies. They don't show contempt. They just... what you see is what you get. They're very honest.
The most significant part of a bond between people and dogs, I would say, is trust between the partnership. Not just the person trusting the dog, but the dog trusting the person as well. So working together so that if they're in a situation they've not been in before, they can rely on each other to feel confident, to grow. You know, when a partnership first starts off, they'll need support. And in time, we gradually drop that away. And the partnership, when you see them flourishing and doing things independently, finding their own way places, then I think that's the key. And that is built through trust. And that comes through time. So it's not something that is instant.
I mean, beforehand, I had... loads of trouble. I was getting into trouble and everything else with the police. So now I've got her, it's like a responsibility, you know what I mean? I've got to care for her, take her here, take her there, look after her, feed her. Before that, when I didn't have her, I was always out, like, up to no good, not with the police and all that. So she saved me, really. Instead of me saving her, she saved me from going to jail and everything else. So I bless her for that, I really do. I really thank her for that. I'll never get rid of her. I've had loads of people walk past and go, oh, I'll buy your dog off you, I'll take your dog off you and all that. I said, you won't. So she's mine only, that's it. My baby, that is.
My favourite thing about Ruby is that she just wants to please you all the time. She can be quite stubborn if she doesn't want to come in at night. And sometimes I'm like, come on, Ruby, come on. Have a biscuit, to bribe her to come in, but no, she won't. Not if she doesn't want to and she wants to carry on playing, then she'll carry on playing outside. I love them. I would never, ever be without a dog. I absolutely love them. They're part of your life and they give you unconditional love always.
I feel proud every time I put that guide dog's harness on. And I'm out interfacing with the public, interacting with the public, with this beautiful, highly intelligent operative by my side. And that can look after somebody like me. And the feeling of pride and love, feeling that dog working and weaving around the streets, through busy situations, and just blindly trusting that dog. Because that's what it is. It's literally blindly trusting the dog. And then to hear people going, wow, did you see that dog? Did you see what that dog did? Then that makes me feel immensely proud of my dog. I said, I love my dog, baby.